Welcome back, people. We're back in shorter time this time to another episode of North of Samora. It's your boy, Tutu, aka Ndlani. I'm joined by Vale. What is up, my guy?
Oh, nothing much, man. Same old shit, different day.
Same old shit, man. You were interviewing business people this week, man.
Yeah. It was an interesting week. Interesting week.
Man, when I saw that, man, when I saw that post with you and Simon, man, that took me back, man. I'm like, shit, look at how far we've come, man, from riding around in SJC to in Harare to now, all of us having different things that we started, and you interviewing him about his company with your company. That's just,
Yeah.
just one of those moments, man.
Yeah, it was an interesting thing because like the way it actually came about was I saw a post a while back about him winning Young Director of the Year, and I was like, I should get when the schedule opens up, let me hit him up and see if he wants to come and have a chat. So I
Yeah.
watched a bunch of interviews before, but I was like, hey, let's have a one-on-one personal conversation because
Yeah.
some interviews, like I'm not dragging interviewing style or anything. It's like they have their own sort of agenda, what they want to achieve, what they want to portray. And I know it starts with one of those things like, yeah, you know what, let's just get, dig into the personal stuff. Let's dig more into that. Because he's open about it, like he's been open about it.
Yeah.
So I saw a little bit more. And yeah, Simon, yeah, he's been through it, man. But yeah, it's good to see that, fate is rewarding him and in the biggest way.
Yeah, I'm glad that you let him talk because you're right. I think there's some interviews where they kind of steer the thing some a certain way, and I think it was important that he got to tell his story. And yeah, I think you knew that as well. And he really did get to tell his story. And for those of you who didn't know, got to really hear what he's been through, the decision that went into what he's done. Because I know the story. I was there for like the beginning of it. But there's some stuff in there that I didn't know about. I won't get into it because that's his story to tell and for people to, go look that up. So on TechZim, the website, go look that up, people. It's a really great interview with Simon, our good friend. But that was good, man. That was really enjoyable. That was really enjoyable to hear.
Yeah, it was fun to make because with this kind of stuff, I get to the point where where there's a bit of fatigue in terms of because you have to do like a double job. You have to have the questions ready, but even if you have the questions ready, like 95% of those questions he's probably going to answer. So you have to be listening to what he's saying and then trying to track back and try to get specifics or find an angle to run off of. But this one was really easy. Like it was legit, like talking to someone I hadn't talked to in a while, which was, genuine in every aspect. So yeah, it was fun to make. I wish I had video and I wish I'd done it in person. It would have been better. But yeah, these are the breaks.
Now you live to learn, man. You live to learn.
Yeah.
So yeah, man, today it's a topic I wanted to get to a while ago, but it's kind of building off the earlier episodes when we were talking about depression and family and growing up in Zimbabwe. And I don't think we can talk about our life and experiences in growing up in Zimbabwe without talking about the most important, in my eyes at least, part of any Zimbabwean story is the grandparents. Anambuya, Nazikuru. Or Gogas, as we call them, not Gogas.
Yeah.
I think at least in my life experience, those experiences with those people, with my grandparents on both sides, those are events that shape your childhood, right? That's when you meet your cousins, and that's when you meet your other cousins and your aunties and Uncle Ningi that you don't remember. That fail to remember each and every event you see them at, which you don't even remember. You remember those questions.
Yeah, Inkakura, I saw you when you were 6 months old. Like, homie, you want me to remember you? What do you think this is?
Oh my God. No, we'll get to that in a bit, man. But yeah, so many good, great, I think, moments as our childhood come from grandparents. I know. I have my own stories, but I want to kind of give the floor to you. Do you have any that you kind of want to, or what was your experience with your grandparents? Start there.
Well, the unfortunate part is I never really got to meet my grandfathers because they died before I was born. So I never got the granddad experience. Great uncles, yes, but you know, when people talk about that, you know, grandfather, you know, this, I never understood because I never experienced it. Grandmothers, on the other hand, both of them were around. Both of them were a pretty big part of my life. On my father's side, she passed away, I think it was in 2016, 2015.
I remember that.
But she was old. She had seen four generations, or was it five generations? She lived to a ripe old age. But you know, the strange thing is that when I talk about my grandma on my dad's side, I remember the last thing she said to me when we went to see it in Kwekwe. My mom just informed, she'd say, "Ah, there's no Nambui," and I'm like, "Okay, cool." I'm to Kwekwe, that time, I remember.
Yeah, but that drive to Kwekwe, I'm like,
I mean,
it's not that far, but it's like, it's still, once you get past Kadoma, things get a little dicey on the roads.
they get worse after Kwekwe. Because, side note, I went to Blues last year. I remember talking about the Blues trip. There's a pothole just outside Gweru that took out three cars. Bruv. This thing was not a pot, it was a galley. And the guy who was driving the car was like, he saw three cars and started slowing down. Because why are people slowing down to highway? And then on the side of the road, you see three cars, one with a bumper smashed in. I guess their life was low life. And then another truck had gone into it. You can see coolant everywhere. And I'm like, yo, it's at night. Like, this is like 11:30 p.m. at night. And I'm like, had we not seen this car, we were going to be on the side of the road, like 120 k's away from Blues, and it would have been a problem. So back to the story. So mom just said, Hansi, let's go see Mbuya. And I'm like, it's not like I didn't want to. Like, I'm a fucking introvert, so I really ever enjoy going outside. And if I do, I'm usually around people I'm comfortable with, or people I've like spoken to for like, or like, people I speak to regularly or often, whatever that is. So we go. The driver's interesting because they said I was driving too slow, but they don't get that when it's me driving alone, fast and furious. When people are in the car, I don't want that shit on my conscience. I want to get.
Oh, yeah. Backseat drivers, especially family members or even friends, you don't want that. Especially in Zimbabwe, you need to concentrate. You need to know where you're going. Otherwise, your car will not forgive you.
Yeah. But it was one of the things where it's just like an innate thing. I was like, I'm never going to go over 120 with people in the car because I need time to react. So I'm almost like, I'm not sure that in a quick watch. I'm like, hey, we get there when we get there. Like, it's just one of those things. Like, I'm not going to overstress. That was one of my first really long trips. So I was kind of nervous. So we get there, Gogas was with this. And it's one of those things where you don't realize it's the last time you're going to see someone. But like she was old. Even when she died, when I called my dad, he was like, she was old, and he kind of got that. And yeah, I was like, yeah, the condolences were easier. It's never easy to lose someone, but you know, in that case, yeah. So we get in there, we talk, you know, the usual pleasantries, whatnot. And then she said this one thing. She's like, usaseme mun. So I never got it. Like, I never got it when in the moment, because she didn't mean it. The thing is, she's like, her vocabulary is deep now, so I don't know what meant at the moment. So for example, if they say kuti wakura, or you've gained weight, went to wafema, which the first time I thought, what the fuck. So the fuck? Okay, I get it now, because like it's literally inhaling. I hope that's what it means. I never really asked. Never fucking asked.
Oh my god, sorry, continue.
So I was like, just like Sasimi Moon. I remember she looked over to me and said, Anzi, something, I don't remember the beginning of what she said, but she said, Anzi Muchke to me or something. So to that is if I had some like crazy compulsive stuff she was kind of seeing like through the ether. And then we left, and then I went back to uni, and then I got the call. So I never got that until like 2 years later, and it was like a case of having empathy. Like, whatever anyone was going through, and I don't know if I was interpreting what she was saying correctly, but whatever anyone's going through, if you can't understand, don't prescribe. Just listen.
Mm-hmm.
Never look down upon someone suffering. Not because it's bad karma and it'll happen to you, but they are as confused as they are. They are as confused as you are in a situation that is completely different. You all don't know what to do. You're all in survival mode. I don't know why she said that. Because again, it was one of those days when I was becoming
comfortable with Toronto.
So I think she was kind of maybe seeing that, the fact that, like, even though I was there, I was like majorly withdrawn, because I was going through my own shit, and yeah, it was never easy. But that was the last thing she said to me. On my mom's side, she has always been, she's always been cordial or kind with me, which I never quite understood, to be honest. I guess what they say about grandmas is true, that a grandmother is always kind to her grandkids because she's trying to make up for the sins of her children and trying to buy her way into heaven. So I got that analogy. And then but she's always been curious, and usually the rare instances when she came over that I can remember is when she really ever enjoys coming over. Either to the farm or to our place, she's quite content where she is. I'm good. She lives in Morewa, so she's pretty much content where she's at. So she's always been nice. Why that is, I have no fucking clue. But yeah, I can be a pill at times. I'm trying to find a way to describe her. I haven't seen her in a while. Actually, my sisters went to see her 2 weeks ago, but I was working that weekend. This is one of those impromptu trips where mom's just like, oh, and there's no number. And it's like, case, like, week in advance, let me plan, maybe I can schedule some shit, you know. So it was really, like, difficult not to go, but I do miss her, to be honest. Like, but she's always been really, really nice. She was happy to see me. I always talk, always ask. So the last time I was there, she asked, I think it was a year or a half ago, she was like, and I'm like, hey, go guys. These streets, I'm gonna tell my so that. Gotta be careful. A lot of people looking for different things, but yeah, But I really wish that I had the granddad experience, because of what I hear with my grandfathers, is they were the really interesting people. Polygamous, it was the time, but hey, bruh. Like, I think on my dad's side, he was literally future before future was a thing. Like,
yeah, that makes sense though. Zim men in that era, at least, that makes sense. Yeah,
thank you. So, but I really, on my mom's side, I hear a lot of good things about my granddad. On my mom's side, he was a policeman. He was, from what I hear, a pillar of the community. Left an interesting legacy behind. He helped a lot of people out. There's a picture of him. I've seen a picture of him. I haven't seen a picture of my granddad on my dad's side, but on my mom's side, yeah, there's a picture of him in my mom's office at the farm. So that's, I remember when she put it up, that was the first time I ever, when the myth of the man became real. That was him in his uniform, usual Rhodesian colonial stuff. They were made to wear shorts for whatever reason, I guess, kind of demeaning, but I guess shorts make sense if you're out there. He was a rich man, apparently. Also, wealth of knowledge, loved my mom to death. From what I hear from my aunts and uncles, she was his favorite. Obviously, in a big family, that pisses people off when you pick one. Because it's like, that's
so special about her. It definitely does.
Yeah, but anyway, that's my story. How about you? I know you got a few. I know you got a few.
Man, first of all, that's awesome to hear that, because some of those stories I've never heard. Mm. And it's unfortunate you didn't get to spend time with your granddads, because trust, I didn't get to spend time with one, but I did with another. It's invaluable. Mm. And I'll get to that in a bit. Yeah, but yeah, man, I had quite the experience. On my mom's side, her parents were alive for much of my life. And then on my dad's side, it was just his mom, because his dad died before I was born. But even on my mom's side, I had like multiple mbuyas, because mbuya's sisters, my grandmother's sisters, they all mbuyas, guys. That's how it is. So even there, I had an experience where I had a relationship with at least two. No, one other. But mine was very much, it was a prominent, because you know how it is, man. It's just, you know, once you get to a certain age, it's like, Andikunanambuya, and then you go. And so they lived in Kadoma. On my mom's side, they lived in Kadoma. And my dad, he had this affinity for them. He was so, he cared about them so much. And he, you know, they were very much pioneers in their own right in Zimbabwe, and they etched their own story. You know, my grandmother, you know, she has her own, she was in education in the beginning. And so she has her own very incredible story that I can't even get to now because it's so much to get to. But she was, you know, very, very strong woman and a very, you know, kind of, you know, in coming up, she did a thing, man. That's the best way I can describe it. Yeah. And my grandfather, you know, he was the greatest, man. He was the dopest. He was kind as fuck. Like, just the nicest person you ever meet. Calm as shit.
I met him when I came to your place.
Oh, yeah. You came. Yeah, you did. Yeah, when you came to the house.
Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, so you met. Yeah, they used to chill. Yeah, you met him before, right? Exactly. Yeah, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, he came. I remember he came to the living room and asked you. He had a sock in his hand. And there was an etching on the sock, and he asked you to tell him which color it was or something like that. And I remember explaining it to me that, oh, and I was like, oh, okay, now it makes total sense. Like, okay, I get it now.
Yeah. He's, yeah, oh, yeah, that was a time where his eyesight was just troubling him at the time. Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, he was like, back in the days, man, you know, he'd come and, because he used to drive, they used to live pretty, well, he used to drive a lot. So when I was young, you come and you like ring the intercom, and you know, because we couldn't say sekuru, we'd say cool. So you know, whenever you come, you're like, who's here? You ring the intercom, it's like, it's cool. And you come inside and you hang out with us. And, you know, he was really the guy that taught me kindness, you know, just patience. You know, he was the person that taught me all that, because he was patient as hell. And he used to run a farm, and you know, they used to run a mining farm as well. And there was cattle on their farm. Their farm is sick, by the way. Like, looking back on it now, it's in Kadoma. There's like multiple paddocks in it. I forgot the acreage, like how much acres it is, but there's like multiple paddocks, like 9 paddocks, something like that. It's crazy, man. There's multiple dams. There used to be wildlife. They used to walk around all around there. It's crazy. But he was kind, man. He used to run, there was like, to be kind in Zimbabwe is, and nice and have patience in Zimbabwe is like a virtue, a very strong virtue, because during those times, especially as things were just getting worse, man, patience was your biggest attribute. And he had that in abundance. And it was in contrast to my father, who was a bit of a hothead. So he was a nice balance when they would come through. And you know, he would like, you'd hear stories about him getting pissed, and I'd be like, what? What? Him? Really? What happened? You know, you ask questions, because it was like, he never showed that side. To this day, I don't think I ever saw that side. Except maybe one time, like, he'd raise his voice, but, and you know, him and Buya were really just primary in my life, because they would come stay with us every now and then. You know, and, you know, Mbuya would kind of, Mbuya was my math teacher, bruh. Mbuya was my math teacher when I was outside of math. Cause you know, math back then, for me at least, I used to struggle with it. So, you know, Mbuya would give me, or he'll give me extra lessons and stuff, which looking back, I think is because my rentals just didn't want to pay the extra lessons to go get someone else, which I'd respect totally. Cause Mbuya was the shit. But man, she used to put me through the ringer, bruh. Oh my God. She was tough. Like, you know, times table and all that stuff. Like, she would be like, let's go over spelling, you know. She used to give, like, so many lessons, so many things, man, outside of school. And it was, you know, and we in a way, we created a relationship through that. Like, she was, like, you know, she was really the first person to, like, truly believe in me, you know, and to provide that kind of environment. And a kind of a relationship like that. She was the first one I was really like friends with, you know, like I wasn't really like, to be honest, I wasn't really friends with my rentals that much, but with Mbuya, you know, I was, you know, cause I don't know, we spent so much time together, and she would kind of just, she used to build so much confidence in me, you know. And, you know, she was, and once we got to, once I got to a certain age, I'd have certain accomplishments and she would like talk to me. She talked to me like an adult. Even when I was a kid, she spoke to me like a grown person, you know, and I appreciated that so much. And as I got older, she used to just have this innate belief in me, man. Like it was, you know, this like, it was almost like a shining light sometimes. When you doubted yourself and when I used to doubt myself a little bit as a kid. Because when you're a kid, you're going through shit as a teenager. So many things you're going through, so many self-esteem issues that you're up and down and all that. And boy, it was always just a shining light, just saying, nah, I believe in you and all that. And sending that kind of energy. Just dope, you know? And, but I think the you know, the thing that I always take away from boy was just those math lessons, bruh. Woo-woo! Bruh. Like, where it used to be so hard on me with my math lessons, man. If I got one wrong, she'd be like, "Whoa, are you getting this wrong?" Well, it's like, wow. And that's the thing that I'll take away the most is just how hard she was when we used to do math lessons. But when we used to visit them, we'd go to Kadoma, man. She made, and all my Zim people know this, man. You know, and any black person probably knows this. You know that potato and onions and you know that, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. That dish, that classic island that gets made. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
She used to make that better than anyone. I don't care who you're talking about. Who comes at me saying, my boy did this, my boy, we're all made the best. On the stove, on that, you know, the old stoves, kupras, somewhere, you know, those items that you cook fire, that, you know, that run on fire, those fire stoves.
Mm.
And you have to cook the shit on the, I don't know what it was about that environment, but getting cooked on a fire stove, but that shit was fire.
Mm.
Bro, we used to sit out there in the morning in Kadoma and we'd like, she'd cook there for breakfast and niggas would just be sitting there watching cows go by because they used to herd cows in the morning. My cousin, you've heard the cows, that's one that's sitting out there, masalala, garapa, fans, they don't even know what's going on. City boys, just watching the shit. And we had our little tin bowls, you know, those tin, you know, the tin cutlery, the tin, like, you know, Tupperware stuff that we used to have, the bowls and stuff, eating out of that shit. Man, that was life, man. I was telling my brothers the other day, like, I wish we could go back knowing what we know now and experience those moments again. I would have the time of my life. Yeah, on that farm, just doing absolutely nothing but watching cows go by and walking around the farm. It was epic, man.
That sounds insane. Yeah, it sounds like quite the trip. And I forgot to mention something. That tea Nemkaka on a wood stove. Jesus, the way that shit slaps.
You were. Hey, that's, bruh.
There is nothing but, like, I've told people, I remember at uni, I'm telling people, like, you know, you guys can say, you know, tea originated from China, whatever it was, and now to brew properly. You have not lived until you've gone seeing your grandmother or any old lady out there. And they make you that tea with milk.
She's made tea for you. Oh. Ah, tea is fire.
Oh, like.
Me and my brothers talk about it all the time, man. Like, my grandmother on my dad's side, Coco, man, in her house, tea. Her tea was the greatest.
Mm.
You go there, or and we used to get something simple, tea, nichingo, ne margarine. Shawari, I was set for life. I was set for the whole morning. Just give me tea, ya gogo, nichingo. Anyway, I was good, bro.
Yeah.
Three stacks, four stacks of bread. Just give me that and tea, and I was good for the morning, bro.
Yeah. people will say like, you can't taste the love in food. You don't understand what we're talking about.
You don't understand, man. You don't understand.
This is what it meant.
And it's the thing, you have to go visit your grand. You have to go visit. Because tea at home is just tea at home.
Yeah.
Chingwa kumba is just tea. It's just chingwa kumba. But kwana gogo, that is a 5-course meal, my friend.
Right. Like the way
it 5-star so meal, sorry. 5-star meal.
The way it'd be so filling and the way it would be enough. Like at home, like tea, bread and margarine is like, you know, this is peasant shit. Like, guys, like, can you get serious in life? Where's the baloney? Where's the sprays? Where's the shit? When you go see Google,
that's when you get extra bougie. You're like, where's the salami at? What are you talking about? You just get bread, and chingwa shit, chingwa ne margarine shit. Yeah, poloni rukupi. Yeah, cheese. Where is this? But kwara gogo is just chingone margarine. That's it. You don't need anything else. Anything else is just too much.
Yes, and that porridge, you know, you know what I'm saying, over the fire. Oh, my God. My God. There's some things that should be illegal. That shit's a drug. Like, it does not get boring. Like, especially sadza, when you hit sadza, you know, like, wood fire sadza is just, I now understand why, like, drunkards, like, go to bars and whatnot on Fridays and whatnot outside of Bay Hall to eat that, you know. Cooked over a flame with wood. I understand. I got it. I was like, yeah, you know, it kind of makes sense. Like, because this stuff does not, like, stove stuff does not, it doesn't, it hits different. Like, it's just different. Mm-hmm. Like, I miss that shit.
Bruh, I really do. It's the greatest shit ever, man. It is really just, it's so simple. And I think it's mostly just because it's made with love. Because when you go to see, you know, when you go to see Anambuya, you know, that's, I think that's why it's important, at least for me. It's like you gotta, I think Zimbabwe, you know, life in the city and life at home with certain people, you know, with certain things that we went through was always tough. Mm. You know, there was always something that you were going through, no matter what it was, what time in life it was, whether you're a kid or a teenager or an adult, there's always things you're going through at home. You see these people every day and familiarity just breeds disrespect. Shout out to Jay Electronics. you know what I'm saying, man. And, you know, so sometimes you just need to escape, you know. And I remember back when we were kids, my rentals would be like, you guys are going to go visit, you know, Anambuya Kukadoma. And we just be like, man, you know, we are solid as city boys as well, you know, no running water, but the times there, man, those are really educational days because you learn the other side of life. Because I think most of us, like you're saying, we're dual babies. So a lot of these things, you know, we had to get exposed to get a more well-rounded, you know, perspective of life, you know, and, you know, going to visit Anambuya in their environment, living in those environments. It was good, man. It was good for us to get out there, man, to get out of their own, you know, bubble and to be uncomfortable and to be called to Masalala by ones who were living there. You know, like my cousin, every time we went there, he used to just say that because he used to always want to let us know and remind us that, you know, we're outsiders and all that. And it was dope. It worked. And, you know, and I think we were better people because of it, you know.
It teaches you like a level of appreciation that you would never learn anywhere else. Because, like,
no,
the ingenuity, just the sheer ingenuity, the way they know and understand the land, the animals, it's ridiculous. Uh-huh. It's like, I was in awe when my grandmother was like, it's going to rain, and being quote unquote a man of science, I was like, eh. I saw on the weather report, you know, chance of rain are in the below 30% and whatnot. Like, I know this is going to rain. And then it hit rain. And so the time she's like, those clouds doesn't look like it's going to rain. I asked her why. That's the time I asked why. She's like, with too much wind blowing. It's going to blow the clouds. So it's like, that's when the way they notice change, the way they notice, like, they're far more in tune with their surroundings than we are, than I will ever be.
Uh-huh. Because,
yeah, I'm surrounded by tick every day, so it's never gonna happen in that way. I'm not that guy. But it's just beautiful to see, and it kind of, again, it's kind of a self-reflective moment where you get to now start appreciating your own talents, like beginning to see the things that you've acquired and learned over the years. It's not nothing. Like, I hate it when people start. Like the Salala talk was nice, you city kids and whatnot, but most people did it in jest. The people who were malicious about it didn't understand that. Number one, we did not choose this. Like, nobody grew up in this chose this. Secondly, there's nothing we can do because we're being made to fit this mold of a society which our parents deem as you know, our varying degrees deem as appropriate. And in that process, what we were taught mainly was to get rid of the blackness in us, to get to fit with the white kids, to speak like them, to act like them, to whatnot. Because I guess that was presentable or whatever it is. But when you then take us back to that, it's now a culture shock. You're in the same country, but you're in a different world completely. And like you said, it's about that not having water and all that. They understood how to live that. We didn't. But it's like when you get old and then you look back, you're like, those experiences were good. Like, it wasn't not a waste of time. I learned quite a bit. And just appreciating manual labor. Like, since we have a farm, so you, the rare occasions that I'm there, I haven't been there in a while, I should confess. But you get to appreciate that, you know, this, I'm going to say it like this. There is no ache more satisfying than after doing a hard day's work. And not this whole sitting on a table typing. Yeah, that's work. Like, it just, it's a different sort of sphere. But there is no ache better than, you know, taking a shower after you've unloaded a truck or you've spent the whole day out there and then in the field. It's a different, when you then come back to city life, it kind of changes your perception. And that wouldn't have been possible. Had life completely been Harare, it wouldn't have been.
No, it wouldn't have been at all, you know. Then, you know, like I said, it's those experiences that kind of shape everyone's like point of view of life. And you get, at least for us, at least, you know, most of us, those of us who've gone through these grandparent experiences and spent so much time with them, we come out, you know, and it's not just us, you know, I mean, it's worldwide. Everybody has an experience with it, has, you know, experiences with their grandparents that have shaped up their adult life. You know, and I know for mine, you know, just, you know, being able to be around Mbuya Nsekuru for a while and then going to see Gogo every now and then as well, you know, you get to just, you know, like, you know, I remember when I saw Gogo on my dad's side, she came to Canada a few years ago. And, this is so funny, but, so now we're grown, right? So now, you know, this is like, what, 2014 or 2016? I think it's 2016 or something. And by then, you know, your boy is now just full on party guy. We've done all the drugs. We've done all the party. So now I'm set in my ways already, you know. So we get there and Gogo is not exposed to that. Gogo just knows to the kid who used to come and say, Gogo Magadi. And, you know, she doesn't know this, all this other stuff. So by then I'd already gone to Toronto multiple times. So I, you know, there was a whole process in the summertime. We gorge and we drink. That's it. We work, we gorge, we drink. That's it. So when it's daytime and at the end of the day, we're either drinking or gorging. So Gogo was, you know, so now there we are drinking our beers and stuff and Gogo, you know, Gogo is now just, you know, putting a mandate saying, I'm going to put a pants. I'm going to put a pants. Ajit's right. You know, so we started doing, because to appease Gogo, we didn't want to cause any problems. Yeah. No one wants problems in the summer, right?
Yeah.
So what we did, we now started hiding the shit. So we started like, honestly, man, I thought it was ridiculous, but to play along, because, you know, it's Gogo, we had to play along. So we bought these 7-Eleven cups, huge cups. And we just started putting Rodo in there. And we started drinking out of that drink, whatever we're drinking. But it was true, like, it was really just because we were like, you know, seeing the cans was the shit that was driving the match. Didn't like seeing the cans. So like, I bet we're just going to put it in these cups and not, and we would, you know, sauce is sauce, man. You're going to get sauced anyway. You know, so she noticed, and then she noticed your boy was sauced one day, and then she's like, she pulled my uncle to the side. He's like, And then I remember my cousin was laughing, saying in my mind when I heard that, I was like, you would be from there anyway.
Rodo is life.
You know, but I remember thinking to myself, like, I remember it was just so foreign, because it was like, you know, just two worlds colliding at that point. To me, drinking in front of adults had become a thing for me. I was like, I don't care anymore. What is, you know, that, you know, but in that's where I was. So I was like, what's the point? Why are we hiding? But to them, it's like, this is Gogo, she's the queen, we gotta kind of respect. I'm like, I bet, fine, all right, cool. But then now it was like halfway through the summer, I was like, come on, guys, we're all grown adults, but Gogo will understand. So by then I was like, look, hey, let's just start drinking in front of Gogo. After that, once she realized what was happening and that everyone's adults and all that, that she's a losing battle, she kind of just stopped saying anything and just sat there with really a condescending smile, let me say. But, you know, that's one of my favorite memories of Gogo is is that time when she came to visit us, and it was really just, like I said, a collision of worlds. But you know, that's who Gogo was. You know, she prayed a lot for Holmes. She, you know, she was religious to her, sometimes to her fault. But she was traditional, because that's all she knew. That's what she knew, and that's what she kept, and she was consistent with it. And it was that consistency that was a shining light and a guiding light to a lot of people in our family, especially on that side of my family. Because on my dad's side, man, no secret, it's very dysfunctional. So, you know, she was, she was pretty much a guiding light. You know, her tradition and her commitment to always being a beacon of energy and positivity and just, you know, unconditional love to whoever, really, not even just, you know, Vasukuru, but to whoever she felt she needed to shed, you know, to spread the energy to, she would do it. And, you know, it was through the years, man, from when I was a kid to when I was an adult, right before she passed, she never changed. Her opinion of the world her opinion of the world never changed. And even though she experienced a lot and she had traveled to different countries, her opinion of the world, her opinion about how she wanted to be in the world never changed. And how she how she was in the world and for the family never changed. And, you know, when she passed, it kind of hit us all hard because, you know, we had lost, you know, the person that prayed for us and we didn't even know she was praying for us, you know? And, you know, we're going to get into a little bit, but, you know, I don't really, you know, subscribe to religion like she did, but knowing that she was doing that was very humbling, you know, and it was, you know, and when Ambuya died, she was, her messages kind of guided me through that very dark time.
Mm. Yeah. I guess, well, the first thing I can say is, why is that all father side of the family in Zim is always questionable? Because that's always what I've heard, and that's what I've experienced as well. I've tried to trace my dad's side family tree, and there are some branches that are parallel, and I don't even want to get into that. Having something like that is super impactful. Like, it's one of those things that you can't really, as a person, replace. And I think you only see the aftershock of it when they're gone. Like, oh yeah, this person, like you said, was praying for us and we didn't even know it. And I guess the saying is true. There are no greater blessings than a grandmother's blessings.
Doubt.
Yeah. So, yeah. And, well, you know, you mentioned religion. And I remember we're texting back and forth this week. I was like, are you sure about this? Because we have some wildly controversial opinions in this Zimbabwean context.
We need to talk about it, man. We need to talk about it. It needs to be talked about. I think my whole experience with religion, you know, it's really just stems from Gogo. And, you know, Gogo was extremely religious. Beautifully so, to be honest with you, man. Like, she would, you know, like, to the point, and everybody has a story, but, you know, this is, honestly, man, I will kid you not, this is when my religion started dwindling. Those, if you've ever gone to an event, and I don't know what it was for you guys, for anyone who's listening, for you and anyone who's listening, but for us, we go to a family event on Gogo's side, even if Gogo is invited to something else, we'll go to an event, specifically on Gogo's side, and it'll be a dope-ass event. Everybody's, you know, having a good time and stuff, and there's just family members kicking it. And at the end of it, there's a family prayer that goes in. So everybody gets into the house. Even if it's a small event, it's a small event usually, and everybody gets in the house or wherever we are, and Gogo prays us off to send us off to everybody then pieces out after that. Those prayers. Man, love them to death. Love them to death. I know exactly the context of them. But man, Gogo would go on for an hour praying, bro. Like a good hour at Namat, thanking so many people, so many things. And I, like I said, it's not even just the message of it all. It was just really just, you know, that was the first time I started just getting worried for religion, man. Because look, man, it's like when you're a kid, I'm like, man, it's Saturday, it's 4:30, United plays in 2 hours. We're in Horton Park, we're in Bari. Hey, Shamwad, it's traffic. This own as well, this is my dad. He takes his time, he likes to drive through random places. So Gogo can just hit us with a quick 5:10, thank you, 15, to ball. No, there's Gogo going off for 30 minutes, an hour. And then you're like, I remember as a kid, I'm like, sucker, treat us say Gogo, you know? But, you know, look, the reason why I say that is because I think there was a lot of, in my family, there was a lot of pressure to live up to the standard that Gogo set, religiously speaking. And I know for a fact my mom wasn't like that. They didn't believe in God, but they weren't every Sunday going to church, people. They weren't, you know, reading the Bible every day, people. You know, my grandparents weren't like that. You know, they had their own, you know, relationship with it. So there was a lot of pressure going there. So we used to go to Sunday church, like every kid, Sunday church, you go there. And to me, my experience with it, it never hit me, man. It never got to me like it did everyone else. I don't really know why. I think maybe it's because of my mom, my grandparents, I was closer to that side than on my dad's side. So maybe because of that, and it's not really strong on that side. At least to my mom, it wasn't strong. And that's why I spent the most time with her. My mom wasn't that religious, so it never hit me like that. It always felt like she was doing the Sunday church stuff and all that as a way to live up to an expectation. But, you know, I'd sit there, man, and I read, you know, I went to Sunday school. I read the Bible. I went, you know, to Sunday service with my mom every Sunday when she wanted to go. Mostly because I needed to go to the flea market afterwards, and that was the only way I could go. But you know, this, to me, it's always been, I'm a questioner. I question shit. I've always been a questioner. I always question everything, you know, as I've grown up, just through my life experiences and things I've experienced, I question things, you know, so it's always been to me a story that I question a lot, all of it. Like, you know, when I was sitting there as a kid hearing the preacher preach about these things and live your life this way, and you feel that pressure as a kid, like, okay, this is the way God intends me to live. And religion is so strong in Zimbabwe that the pressure of living up to things on a religious basis or from a religious perspective, it's there. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not, as a kid, it's right there. It's undeniable. It's there in your family. It's there in your friends. You know, some people you talk to that religion. We had a very, you know, a friend who was religious, Kunyai. You know, very, very religious family. So, you know, and that was my friend growing up. So that, I was really close to it, but it never hit me in the same way that it did other people. And so I began to question it as a kid, reading these stories in the Bible and being like, what are we, you know, I'm supposed to have this. I'm seeing people in church having this rigorous, this very, you know, passionate, you know, response to what the, you know, the guy is saying. And when they're praying, I was at all night prayers one time with a kid. I went to an all night prayer and people are passionately feeling this, and it's not registering with me.
Yeah.
You know, it's not registering with me. Like, I can't understand. Like, I get the story. I understand it. I see it. And there's something that I pick away, you know, that hits you. But then as the overall, if you want to get me to like abide, I think the way it's pushed, the way it was pushed on me and the way it gets pushed in certain contexts, it makes you question it. And once you start critically thinking with things like this, you go down a rabbit hole of but how about, but this, but that. And then all of a sudden you have 1,000 questions and you're getting answers from people who weren't there. It's people's interpretation of what is being said. And at that point, that's when it lost me, man. That's when it disconnected with me. And so since then, man, I've just been questioning it ever since. because I truly believe that, you know, you're supposed to relate to God and religion, no matter who it is, in your own way, and not be pressured into living, into experiencing, into forming a relationship with religion and God, whoever your God is, in a way that someone else experiences it. I can't tell you to experience someone I know like I experienced them, you know? Like, you have to form your own relationship with it, you know, with music, with people, with, you have to form your own relationship with this. And I think religion has to be like that. And I think so, I think just from the way I was experiencing the Sunday school and preacher being up, the process of it, it just didn't sit right to me that we're listening to this guy say these things. And it's basically, and I'm like, this is no different than me sitting in literature, listening to Mrs. Wilde tell me about King Lear. You know, like, in my eyes, I remember seeing it like this is no different. And once I got to asking questions about religion, the questions kept coming. And the answers I was getting were all, don't get me wrong, I have a lot of religious people in my life. And the answers I was getting were all very much valid and made sense. But I just didn't believe them because that's the interpretation of it. And then you hear stories and you read things about cults that perform based on religion and fucking people like Mike Pence. And then you're like, okay, what are we doing here, you know? But that, you know, that's, you know, hey, that's me. I know you have your own take on it. What was your experience growing up and then your opinion about, you know, or your relationship with it?
It's like my sort of experience is weird because I was deeply into it at some point in my, I was into it because I had no choice. And then when I got older, like in early teens, like, okay, I was into it. Doing well at Sunday school, all that kind of stuff. It makes sense. Like, yeah, I think it was the same thing. It's like then bringing up the questions. And what hit it for me was a couple of events. So because usually the head of the household, the father, whatever, the church that he subscribes to is the church that the family will eventually follow. At least that's how it's supposed to work. But my mom is very religious. So we did the whole AFM thing. My dad's Zayoja. He's never really been. He's starting to be more religious as he gets older.
Why, Lala? Why are dads so worried for religion? Why? I don't know. Like, my dad was so worried for religion, man. Yeah. And I didn't understand because he grew up, the family that he grew up in, I don't understand how that's a thing.
Yeah, it's I even asked him. He was like, you know, I don't really. He never really enjoyed concerning himself and stuff like that. So I just respected it when he never went to church. We used to go with my mom, and then he'd just be at home, and then we'd see him in the afternoon at home. So So the things that happened was, so we did the whole AFM thing. So my mom was AFM. I don't know when I started noticing it, but the factionalism within the church was what got me. I was like, wait.
People are
literally picking sides about who does this and what. So I vaguely remember what happened then because I was like 12, 13, or 14 before I got to high school. Pastor Charamba, the singer, was part of that church. It was by Oro Boys. Pastor Mrefu was there as well. And then there was a gap, and then Pastor Mrefu did his own thing, and I think that church stayed by itself. And then I was like, no, but if you're all essentially worshiping the same person and you all want the best interest for everybody, who cares who's in control? It's like, who gives a crap? We're all doing the same thing for the same reason, so who cares who's delivering the message? And then I started going deeper into, okay, so the message, what even is the message? Because I treated it like school, where it's regurgitate what you've been taught and what you've been told it means. So I then like, no, this doesn't. So it then led me to actually reading the entire thing. To being like, okay, let's try and understand what the fuck is going on here.
When you get in,
rabbit hole was intense. I remember that's when I think 14, 15, when I started actively rebelling against it. And I was like, yeah, you know what? Fuck this shit. I had an atheist phase for like, I think nearly six or seven years, I think. I was like, this is nonsense. Like, I went, but I did not participate because I was like, and it's not like I knew better. It's just like, the answers I got were not satisfactory. They didn't make sense.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, there we go. Like they were valid, but they weren't satisfactory.
Mm. They were more. When I look back on it now, I think it was more paternalism. This is what you are supposed to understand. Don't ask questions. And I'm like, if you don't ask questions, how the hell are we going to get forward? So then I started looking at, you know, that's when I fell in love with history. So going into the history of it and whatnot, and then seeing how religion was used as a colonial tool. The armies did not arrive first, the missionaries came first, which is an interesting saying that most symbols say. You know, placate the masses, change their religion. You know, it's fun. It's fascinating when they look at other cultures that stayed ardent to what they believed. I think Korea is South Korea is one of the few Asian countries that switch, because it's Christian backing is incredible. Like they've got mega churches and shit. But Japan, China, all sort of resisted. Like they were steadfast in resisting for whatever reason. And I think I understood why. It's like, it's this question that I was reading. Christopher Hitchens wrote this book, which was the turning point for me, which answered questions, but offered even more questions than he couldn't even answer, because he even left a blank. But he was full-blown atheist. I still have that, and I have no idea what's going on here. I'm just trying to figure it out. And he said, if God is perfect, then if God wants us to worship him and all his children, why did he appear to an illiterate tribe in the Middle East? Why did he not present himself in the form that he is to everyone? Why must one specific group of people be teaching all the other groups of people about this God? And I was like, and he then went further to say, ritual sacrifice is nothing that is new. It's something that we've seen in other religions. Why would an all-powerful, all-knowing, ever-present God want to sacrifice part of himself, which he calls his son, in order to absolve us of our sins? If that's the process it takes, then he's not all-powerful. And it's one of those things that confronted my ideal of God, because it was one thing you never questioned that. Like, that saying was that broke me through that brick wall of, okay, you know, nobody knows what the fuck they're talking about. Like, this is just, it's all vibes. Like, the more I went there, I was like, nah, fuck this shit. It's all vibes. And I hated it for a very long time.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that. You would make sure that it was known you were not a fan of religion. Yeah.
People knew. Like people say when people get drunk, don't get political. Around me, it was don't get religious. Because I would just fucking go off. And even political as well, just freaking go off as well. So it was a case of just keep it cordial and we're going to have a good night. Because people could get easily offended. Like offense is taken, never given. So someone's perception of one thing is different from your understanding of it, and you shouldn't take it.
Oh, bars.
Yeah, so it's weird, but it was what it is. I meant that a lot of the Nigerian community, and I'm not slating them for anything. Like they are that Nigerians are people have a lot of bad things to say about them. Personally, for me, they are the most resourceful and industrious people I've ever encountered. Africans. Because they fit into a system so well, they understand it. The goal when you arrive anywhere new is to understand the system. When you understand the system, you can...
They understand it very, very quickly and efficiently.
The problem with me with that was that the way they defended religion so much. Niggas, that you'd legit on a Saturday after, you know, we had reworks or Saturday classes, you smoke weed with you, then see coming out when we are hungover, because club was Saturday club, hungover, you peer out your apartment window and you see someone dressed up going to church. I'm like, yo, when, bruv? Like, how is this going to mesh? So all those inconsistencies for me then raised another question. I remember asking it to a Catholic priest, and I said, he actually a very nice guy. He used to entertain my flights of fancy. And I asked him, if there was no promise of heaven, would you still praise God?
Run that back.
If there was no promise of heaven or eternity or, you know, this glorious place we're going to with no suffering, would you worship God if this was all?
Oh,
if we would die here.
Oh,
and he looked at
That is a violent question.
I was violent those days. Like, I was violent.
That is a violent question. I was
on some of the tip. I was on some of the tip those days, man. Like I asked him point blank, and I was like, "Nah, I truly believe that we
have. Wait, so what was your thinking behind this? If there was no promise of thing and you're just told God exists, but there was no promise of anything.
Yeah, would you still worship God?
Would you still believe in him?
Do you know where that came from, actually? It came from, I think it was Cat Williams or Chris Rock, when they said, people go to the club on Saturday night, go to church on Sunday, and give God his $20 and all is forgiven. For me, that's that saying in my head was, it's all transactional. Humans are selfish by nature. We want what suits our interests. So people will continue to make themselves, as Christopher Hitchens said, servile and prostrate.
Son, how is Joel, how does Joel, is that the what they call those teens?
Yeah,
Joel. Is that how you say the name?
Yeah, Joel.
How are they a multi-million dollar family?
Yeah, that's again. That's,
what is their product?
That's what I
enjoy. How are we, what are we talking about here, man?
Bruv.
Like, if you want to tell me about, this is what I think. Like, I push back on it. I'm like, look, I'm fine if it exists and if you relate it to it, you relate to it. That's mm-hmm. cool. But don't push it on me like it's some, like it's some all innocent thing, entity in this world. It's not. It's an interpretation. It's a thing that somebody wrote that we've been interpreting for years as being gospel. But someone else has a different interpretation of it, and they will use it for their own advantage.
Prosperity gospel, my G.
That is my thing about it. Yeah, you know? Like Osteen. Why were people so scared of Pence? Pence is so religious, but why were people so scared of him to get into power? Because of his interpretation of what God wanted. That's the shit here. We got a whole side of religion, Catholicism, that's marred with all those ones, they were touching boys. Yeah. There's a whole scandal about it. There's an entire thing that's going on in Canada right now about the bodies they were burying.
Yeah.
Like, this is a thing, you know? So when I push back on it, it's not to say that it's all bogus. It's to say that, look, let's call it what it is. It's an it's a thing that somebody wrote years ago that someone said is the gospel, is the truth, is the thing, the guide to humanity, humanity's existence in this world. And we all took that as liberty because humanity needed guidance back then. They needed something to follow, something to believe in, guidelines, structure, and all that. But as time went on, it began to become something that became very outdated. And now it is interpreted differently depending on the human being you're talking to.
It's art, man. It's art. Hitchens said it himself. I think he said, even Richard Dawkins, the Four Horsemen, I'm sure a lot of people really know about them, the new wave of atheists that arose. That was my education.
But, sorry, don't interrupt. I just want to just put this in the middle of the episode. This is our opinions, people. This is our opinion. Don't get weird with us. This is just our opinion. We're both very well versed in religion. We grew up in these families. So we know we're not talking out of our ass here. We've experienced it. We're talking from experience, not outside of experience. Yeah. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, you got to take it with a grain of salt. And if you believe, like, I'll get to that in a bit, but my education in atheism was through the Four Horsemen. I went through that phase of like abundant rejection of it, and I went after it. In essence, I remember there's this guy when I was in MGA in South Africa, this pastor who made me his pet project to convert to Christianity, and I was like, homie, you're not getting far with this because I am not in any way receptive to what you're saying. And every argument he had a counter argument too, and he found it difficult to understand why someone would be this ardent and not trying to believe in this safety and sanctuary that God has created. And I'm like, the one thing that has always struck me, and I think the whole movement, my whole atheist phase made me receptive to suffering. Because you remember that saying, it's God's will, it's God's will. And I remember, again, I reference Hitchens, because Hitchens, like, the dude was just, he was legit the guy who had the, Dawkins was too nice. Dawkins is very scientific. Well, is, because he's still alive. But Hitchens passed away. But Hitchens would say, is it God's will for a child to be born with cancer? What purpose does that serve? I remember, what's his name? Stephen Fry. Talking about a insect that I never actually looked it up, but it could be incorrect. An insect that its whole life cycle is burrowing into the eyes of children, and then and then popping out again with Spurs or whatever, with Bakes or whatever. And he asked the same question with Eckhart as well. And it then began to hit me. He said, nah, y'all don't know what this person wants. You guys basically... Now, this is where it gets offensive. And I remember saying this to someone. You guys are forwarding the world's biggest chain message. It started thousands of years ago, and we've been forwarding the same message generation down generation without even asking questions as to why. Now, these days, if you get a WhatsApp or whatever message that's forwarded, and it's saying forward this to 5 people to get this, bruh, you'd legit block, try to put it away. But it's this thing that is so ingrained with us. And I like what you said when you said we needed structure. The thing is, it's what you're saying, like in Canada, the native children, that they found that they're trying to reprogram the atrocities about, like the involvement of the Catholic Church in the Rwandan genocide. How the Catholic Church apparently gave the blessing to the Third Reich and to Hitler and whatnot. How Christianity itself has been against Judaism, of which it blossomed from Judaism, because the Pentateuch are the old Testament is pretty much what Judaism runs on. That sort of propensity for distaste, that ease of violence, that ease to defend, that is not, for me, someone who created something as magical as what the world is and what the universe is, something that we're uncovering day after day after day.
Can't be it, right? It just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't line up. This person is way too fucking smart to watch this. For me, it's...
No.
My position now, and for anyone listening, is I don't know and I'm comfortable not knowing. If I do get a revelation one day, fan-fucking-tastic. But right now, I can't tell you. All I'm doing is discovering.
Exactly. And that's, and remember, I told you this years ago, and I repeat it every year. Until I can sit down with the man himself and his son and say, what happened? I will question it. I will question it. Because look, man, if I was to tell a kid, think about it. If I was to tell a kid now, my nephew is 8, 7 years old, and he's 10 or whatever, and I was to tell him, hey, listen, this is a story. Homeboy went and freed slaves with a staff that brought plagues for 7 days or whatever. And then he's freed these slaves, and when they're walking, they had to cross a big sea, the Red Sea. And he put his staff down, and the sea parted ways. And if you're looking at me like, is that a Marvel movie? What are you talking about? That's the way I interpret it. Like, someone else can believe that, and they can believe it. That's good, but that's how I interpret it. I don't know that. People have told me years and years and years, but no one was actually there to see that.
Yeah.
I just have to believe that this book was true. So until I can sit down with the people that wrote that and say, look, that's just me, because I question things that are still like an item. I believe more in Tom Brady winning a Super Bowl than I do that these stories are real. It's not that I don't believe in this stuff. I just believe in this more because I've seen it. I know for a fact that if I say Tom, 2 minutes to go, game-winning drive, he can do that. LeBron, win a playoff game, he can do it. Did this really happen? I don't know. You've told me for 2,000 years it's happened. But I don't know. I don't know. I've never met the person who said that. I just have to trust that for 2,000 years people are telling the truth.
And
you know?
The way life's perpetuated is one thing that is frightening. I think Ricky Gervais said, I don't know where he got the quote from exactly. He was like, if humanity was to be wiped out or halved or whatever, Christianity or religion would never look the same. We'd be praying to something that's different. And whoever he got this quote from was supremely profound. And he said, the tenets of science, regardless of the language spoken, will resurface in the same way because we're making the very same observations. And the language, mathematical language might be different. But if we learn the codex of how they interpret language, how they interpret numbers, we will understand it. It will come out pretty much the same way because some of these things are constants. And I'm not saying science is a certainty. Again, it's been wrong. Like eugenics, for example, where, you know, skull size is measured, you know, a species or a race's excellence or intelligence or whatever. Science is not perfect. And this is why people who vouch for religion think when I come up and I say science is perfect. Science has done some messed up things. The whole machinery of war is the advancement of science. We have never been more inventive than when we're trying to kill one another. Sarin gas. Mm-hmm. Sarin gas is fucked up. Who sat down and thought about that? Who said that I want someone's receptors to be blocked and they want them to suffocate?
Who sat down and thought about a nuclear bomb saying, look, when we drop this, it will wipe out an entire fucking region. It would be unlivable. The fucking soil would be unlivable. The continent, the air. We will wipe out an entire civilization from existence. And a portion of Earth will be unlivable if we drop this bomb. And someone said, bet. Make that.
Yeah, you reminded me of a line from Fringe, when Walter Bishop, who unfortunately one of my fictional mentors, was like, "Do you think Robert Oppenheimer slept when his little invention killed hundreds of thousands of people in a fraction of a second?" Like, that is ridiculous. That's to fathom that an invention of to create power was used to create the most destructive a weapon that kept the world at a deadlock for nearly 60 years, fearing that the end was near. Science is not perfect. This is just a demonstration of it. Science is as evil.
Continue.
No, go on.
I was going to say, like just the whole thing about, you know, it's not being perfect. Old Testament God.
Ooh, that guy
Old was, Testament God.
That guy was Hoodie Lemon.
That was an
Hoodie
asshole.
Mello. That guy was Hoodie Mello. Like, that guy gave no fucks. Like,
on 60 points, no assists. That's who that guy was. 60 points, no assists. Old Testament God. Oh, that's the guy I want to sit. When I sit down with GOD, I'm like, listen, man, if I do, I'm like, listen, dog, fam, what were you going through in the Old Testament? What was happening? What? Some of those stories, dog. Like when he put Job through on. No.
Yeah, Job got the word. Like, Job got it. This is why I hate exams. I think
Is that the one who is just a supreme asshole to for no reason?
Nah, he wanted to
just to flex on the devil.
Yeah, he's supposed to. Yeah, he wanted to test his faith. And he was like, you can tempt him. Which is funny because I was watching, like, there's a part of the Bible I think I missed, or part of my studies that I missed. But there's this fact that was made, which, let me just preface anyone listening, I haven't looked up. So this is just me just vibing. There was never a mention of the devil or whatever in the Bible as we know him. The story of Job, the guy was describing was like, and he even said it in his interpretation wasn't perfect, but it felt more like the devil, whoever it was testing Job, was an agent of God. It was like, yeah, no, listen, let's see if this guy really about it. Like, if he's really, really, really about it.
So you're saying you're trying to flex his power?
Pretty much. Like, yeah, this guy's ardent, right? Put him to the test. And I'm like, why, if you know what's going to happen, what has happened, if you're all powerful, all present in every way, why would you even need to put him through that? You know who he is, because you've seen where he's going, where he's coming from. Like, homie, the inconsistencies are fucked up. And you're like
I'll tell you who this is the person that broke religion for me. Eddie Griffin. Yeah. Eddie Griffin has a set where he was like, he asked this question. He's like, oh, he's like, the Bible says, and I think I'm paraphrasing this, but he says it's Adam and then it's Eve, right? They were created by God. And then there are these children, and then there are children who got married. Who did they get married to? Who? And then also like their own kids. Oh, so that's what religion was, that's what humanity was born from. Niggas had incest and what? And then I remember just hearing that, like, bruh.
Yeah, our family is a straight line. It's a straight line. Like, that's, yeah.
And then, you know, then there's the mention of how, you know, for years, you know, Jesus was portrayed as a twion, as a white guy. And then people started saying, that region where he was born? Yeah. Are you sure?
I don't know which, you know, what's funny, you brought up Eddie Griffin. There's a comedian who said, actually two, George Carlin, God rest his soul, hilarious man. But the other guy, I forgot his name. He was like, people think Jesus is white in the Middle East. He wouldn't have needed four miracles. He would be the miracle. I was like, shit, nigga. Put it like that. And then George Carlin, obviously, his set on religion was, it's still iconic. I still sometimes watch it on YouTube just for shits and giggles because he was so precise. He communicated it so well. The one thing that always gets me, and it's a very simple line, everything else is sort of, you know, you know, part philosophical, part comedy. But he said, people believe there's an all-seeing man in the sky who, you know, watches over everything, who's powerful, who, if you don't believe in him and you don't follow his ways, will burn you for an eternity and smite you down and your descendants. But he loves you. And the crowd just laughed. And the other one was, the one I remember vividly was, people will believe that there's a God in the sky or whatever. But if you tell them that, well, that there's wet paint on that wall, they'll have to touch it to be sure. He's like, those are the inconsistencies that that happen. And funny enough, I ran into a joke that runs on that. This guy was pissed off. I think it was on TikTok or something. He was pissed off at something or someone was religious. He's like, and it was mostly attacking women or whichever woman he was dealing with in that situation. But it was like, this woman has a long distance relationship with a guy who doesn't text back. But she doesn't believe what I'm telling her. I was just like, it violates.
Yo, that reminds me of a tweet that I saw the other day. What did he say? There's a girl that was saying, oh, this guy told me that he prayed for me to come into his life, whatever. And the guy replied saying, hey, man, God put, this is God sent, you know, God sent slavery prayers to voicemail for 400 years. Yo, as he said, God, he said slavery prayers to voicemail for 400 years. Just be a whole, my people. I was like, yo, that is violent. That is so violent. And it really just, it brings me back to shout out to Zack Snyder, but it brings me back to that quote in Batman vs. Superman, when he's, you know, the whole thing with Kal-El and his mom, and he's like, if God is all powerful, he cannot be all good. And if he's all good, then he cannot be all powerful, you know? And, you know, I think, and it also comes back to supernatural. By the way, these are all multiple interpretations of religion and God. And you know, in Supernatural, where they asked, you know, where they had God come in there, they asked him, where you been, man? All this shit happening in the world, all these crises, where you been? And he just gave some vague answer saying, yeah, humanity just got self-sufficient and I need you guys to figure that shit out on your own. And I was like, oh. Because, you know, my grandmother, to the day she died, was praying about a better Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe got worse.
Fuck, bruh. That hit me in the soul. Jesus Christ. Oof.
Zimbabwe got worse. You know? Every day, my brothers can testify this. Every day, me and my brothers would go to school and my mom would pray before we would pray in the car. Every day, we'd say a prayer, someone would pray, and we'd pray for better Zimbabwe and all that. That was during the crisis in 2008. Shit got worse. She got better for a little bit, and then we left, and she got worse. You know, and so you know, when you experience that, for me, it's hard to have faith in something that doesn't really move the needle, because you realize that it's really just I don't know, like I said, my interpretation of it, it's really just a programming. And once you start asking yourself these questions, like, okay, what are these questions, and then you have to then start forming a relationship with it that is your own, not based on someone else's. Someone else might be able to have the heart and the soul to pray consistently for all of their lives for better days. Someone has that capacity in their heart to do that, that trust in the unknown. I don't. I trust in the things that I know. I trust in the things that I can confirm. And so I question this. It's like Jay, you know that Jay-Z line, question religion, question it all. Question it all until those questions are solved. You know? And that's my whole point of view with religion. I have my own relationship with God, with religion, you know, that is my own, developed over years and years, based on all the information and shit I've seen, and I've developed my own relationship with it. That doesn't mean I believe in it blindly. No. I'm a questioner. I've seen too much shit go on in the world for me to not question it. 2020, shit, that's God's will. That's God's will, right? So to put us, okay, that's it. I don't have no, you know, I guess I just have an issue with, not that I've had people in my life that do this, not even Gogo did this, but I just have an issue when it's pushed on us in a certain way. And then you start thinking about it and you're like, look, man, there's things in there that are outdated. The opinion, you know, the what the Bible says about, you know, gay people and people who are you know, who explore life differently than that. What does it say about them? You know? You know, the Ten Commandments, that I don't know how many centuries it took to get outdated, but I don't think it took long.
Oh, yeah.
you know? Mm-hmm. And so things like this that I just question. It's not like I call them, I just question them. You know? And then there's the whole story about Lucifer. Like you were saying that someone was saying, like, I haven't confirmed it, but what I was told about the devil and all that, there was a certain description of it. And then I watched the show about Lucifer that had so many people up in arms when it came out. So they made a petition about it too, saying, get this show off the air. It's going to deliver bad things. And I'm like, no. It's interpreting what we've been told about the devil. That one story that said he's a fallen angel that fell out of heaven, that God dismissed. And it explored that version of the story as saying, what if he's a misunderstood person? And for 6 years, they did that. They explored this idea of the a fallen angel sent out of God's kingdom because he started questioning shit. Why this? Why that? Why do we do this? Why do we do that? You know, and it was really just, and it was through those shows, because I learned through those kind of, I learned like that, right? I read and I also learned through visual media. And, you know, like, because my opinion about the Bible has always been, it's a story that anybody can interpret their own way. I didn't dismiss these shows, because if somebody can sit and listen, that is my opinion. Again, if someone can sit for 3 hours and listen to a priest interpret the Bible, I can watch a show and do the same thing. I don't understand how they're different. Some guy got ordained by humanity and said he's an expert on this. These guys are reading the book and they're doing the same thing. They're getting paid for it. There's a reverend somewhere that gets paid for it too. No, so what are we talking about here?
They don't pay tax and they want to participate in the state machinery.
You know, like I said before, man, this is all a relationship. It has to be like everything, a relationship and experience that you have on your own. Mm. And if you're a young person listening to this, I really just urge you to form your own relationship with it and not be pressured by other people and external factors, because that's what it is. And if you're a person that believes wholeheartedly in the blind if you have that much optimism in you, then please go for it. Don't take us and this is just our opinions are all formed by our experiences, you know, and our experiences have gotten us to this point. But if you're a person that believes wholeheartedly, please just form your own relationship with it and don't let anybody interrupt that and then influence that and corrupt that. You know, if you have questions, question it. Don't be afraid, because I think, you know, you hear stories about, you know, the who's that guy that formed a cult? What's his name? Manson. Am I getting that right?
Manson, Jim Jones, a bunch of fucking cults have been formed around their own religion, not just Christianity.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, don't blindly go into this stuff. Mm. If you're going to go into it, follow somebody that you know for sure has their moral compass on right, in the right direction, and follow those people. I was just lucky that in my environment, I had people who were that direction and the moral compass, I trusted them. So that when it got to a point now where they were now pushing that on me and trying to get me to love it their way, I had to push back and say, we grew up different. I don't experience it like you do. I have questions.
This is what I say to most people who say, you don't understand what it is to be religious. And I always like to remind them that I was very devoutly. The thing I learned about religion is that it's like a relationship. Before you can get into anything with anyone, you have to yourself sorted. You have to understand what you value, what your core is. Mm-hmm. Those voices that are within us that tell us things that we suppress for whatever reason. I'm not saying these malicious voices or whatever. There's something you're supposed to do that pulls you to do something and you fight it for whatever reason. There things like setting boundaries. Like in now, most of social media is about, you know, set your boundaries, do this. Get to that point where you are comfortable with yourself, being alone with yourself, have set boundaries as to, I do not accept this kind of treatment, that kind of treatment. and then walk into it with that sort of mindset. And if you want to build the relationship, they're like, I'm not going to prescribe to you how exactly you should do that. But the one thing is be at peace with yourself, because if you are not, you're going to be led down paths by people who have their own bad intentions. Because the one thing I've seen is that religion has been used to take people's agency away, people's ability to make tough
decisions. Particularly in communities that don't really have another option, right? The only they have for hope and that source of hope is religion.
Exactly.
You know? And so they treat it, especially in, you know, in Zimbabwe, I feel like that's a thing where it's like all they have is religion to give them hope, to give them something to believe in, something to look forward, something to work for, to strive for, that God has their back. That's right. Why my grandmother prayed all those years. That's why my mom prayed all those years. Mm-hmm. Because you believe in people, they let you down. But if you believe in God, God will guide you through all this stuff. And that's their relationship with it.
You've actually hit the nail on the head that I wanted to stick with next, actually. Is that...
Mm-hmm.
There is, if you lead yourself, if someone leads you down, there's no greater disappointment than someone promising you glory and then you're led to nothing. That is the most heart-wrenching, disappointing thing. Anyone who's followed United and we watched David Moyes' era, that's kind of like how it felt. You know, you get led by this person.
God, that is a perfect, that is a perfect metaphor, because God, aka Sir Alex, fucking promised us the second coming of him, his prodigal son. Scotland fucking managed a mid-table club but rising himself up, and we were like, yes, the next one, prodigal son. And boy, oh boy, was he a fucking failure.
And how long did it take us?
Oh my God,
12 years to get to a point where we're respectable again. If it's something if it's something you're going to do, lead yourself there. Like, I'll give you an example of my own experiences. I've made some stupid fucking purchase decisions in my life, but I made them wholeheartedly. And even though I broke towards the end of the month, I knew everything I had done was within my power. No one could tell me shit. This is my suffering. No one can tell me anything. And if I go out and flex next day, next payday, whatever, it is me. I'm managing it. I'm doing what I'm doing in the background. When you become comfortable in your own sort of vicinity, and not doing anything for anyone and making sure you're leading yourself there. Disappointment is great if you let yourself there. If someone leads you there, you'll get murderous. Trust me, you will start lighting torches and getting pitchforks. Never let anyone take away your agency, even if they're your pastor. Now, I'm not prescribing you to this, but I want you to understand one thing. Zimbabwe is a perfect case study. Zimbabwe and every other country that calls itself democratic and Christian, just look at the shit people have been up to. Now, I'm not saying most of the stuff in the media is true. It might not be, might be. I don't want to make enemies, you know, in that way above my pay grade. But what I'm saying is, when you see, and it's not just Zimbabwe, it's American politicians, when campaigns start, where do they go? You see them at churches, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, who's never prayed a day in his life. You saw him at
they're doing a photo op with an upside down Bible. Come on, dog.
That's the kind of thing you got to understand. These people, they want to tug at your heartstrings. Now, take that from a political perspective. That obviously, you know, those leaders do those things. You know, Joe Biden's been a Catholic for God knows how long, but you know, he was out there when he got his he won, I think he was in his hometown in the Catholic Church. That whole perception of trying to appeal to so many different facets of people, they use your beliefs to try and connect with you. They're leading you down somewhere where they don't even believe. Man, the amount of shit these leaders have done, especially the very powerful nations, if you think they believe in a God, you're fucking kidding yourself. They don't give a shit. Now, I'm not saying they did these things because the decisions were easy. No, some of the decisions were hard. Like, if you're in that situation, would you have made a different call? Probably not. But it's the way they try to associate you with them through something that they know that you can't question. Secondly, in church, my guy, listen, no one knows the truth. Worst of all, a man who's asking you for money to tell you the truth. If someone wants to tell you the truth, they will not charge you a cent. They will be like me on a soapbox. And I'm not saying what I'm saying is true. They'll be like me in my teens in soapbox, preaching to whoever would listen, because they utterly believe that this is the way. There is no monetary value or gain to enlightenment. Enlightenment, in most cases, was free. If you look at all the resources now, most of the resources online, you can find research papers for free because they're willing to share that knowledge because it's a discovery. Niggas will pay for admission for you to get salvation. There is no subscription service to heaven, no matter how much you want to believe in it, that, you know, people like me and Tudor, when we get to heaven, God will be like, oh yeah, you guys lived an okay life. I don't see, anything that, you know, you did, you fucked up, but you tried your best. But because you didn't subscribe to our service on Sunday, and you didn't give your daily, your tithe to pay your subscription fee, we're not going to let you in. I don't think it works.
Man on. Bruh. Now, question St. Peter, right there, saying, let me see your manager. Let me see your manager. I know for sure. I know for sure 10 people in here that didn't subscribe to your daily Sunday service. Talking about. That's the kind of ruckus I'll cause if I ever got that excuse. Like, let me see your manager. I know some people in here. I'll start naming names. Like, is he in here? Is he in here?
Mm-hmm.
Him? Man, I was with him every Sunday. He ain't in here. Come on. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll be calling people out saying, nah. That's when you know that it's a whole bunch of live. When you now start living life, especially when you live life like this, and you now start really like, nah, come on, man. Like, I don't know. For a while in Zoom, I think it was the impression was given that if you didn't go to Sunday, you know, church, the whole thing. But as you got older, you started realizing, bruh, really? Is that a thing? Am I going to get judged because I didn't do that? Mm-hmm. Nah, man, that's not how, really. Come on, man. I mean, we're way too self-aware. I think that was the thing about some of it being outdated. Is like, I think a lot of it was pushed at times where it's like, this is what all people needed for inspiration, for guidance. There are a lot more places for guidance and solutions now that don't include that you don't have to go to the Bible to get that guidance. You know, we're a lot more self-aware about what about life and operating life. There's a lot more people who've lived life, that we can draw from in terms of experience, in terms of good behavior. People who've done it. Experience that's like practical. It's practical experience, right? Instead of like a visual alert book that we're reading or like assuming this happened. Otherwise, like I said, it's just a story.
It's a story. And there's something Tula and I talked about, I think it was 2018 or 2019, where I think there's sort of like there's really nothing wrong with being a Christian. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. Like, you know, not saying rebel against, you know, your religion. Like, what Tudu said, build your own relationship with it. Understand what your values are, and then juxtapose it to what you're seeing, and build it. Like, it might stray away from what the scripture says, and you might, you know, form your own understanding of it. Yeah, you know, do that. There's nothing wrong with being a Christian. It's like Hitchin said, the Bible is one of the most beautiful pieces of literature ever written. And I agree. Like, in terms of literally, it's really good. The problem, is when never make never sort of inculcate people in terms of forcibly pushing them towards your ideals and beliefs. If it's something you believe in, make it your problem. Here's why we're discussing it, because our experiences are vastly different. Our beliefs in it are vastly different. It's not even the same. What we're saying is basically our viewpoint on it. And we're not saying subscribe to it. Nah. Hey, do your thing. But it's when you feel the compulsion to spread it. And this is the thing. When you feel against someone's will, and especially...
Yeah, that's the big point right there. When you feel the compulsion to kind of spread your understanding of it, do that with it, understanding that, you know, hey, not everybody experiences the way you do.
And the children. Children, it's one of the things that makes me frightened to be a parent, to be honest, is what will I teach them? How will I teach them morality? Because my understanding of it is a patchwork of different things that I feel like religion might be the easiest thing to get them into it, and then let them make the decision when they grow up. Like, yeah, do you really want to follow this or whatnot? But I never want them to have questions as to why doesn't dad pray. I don't want them to have that sort of... That's what frightens me, because my position is strange. I can't even define it. I don't think I'm atheist anymore. I just don't know. Like, not that I don't know. There are no conclusive answers that I can...
What's the question? You know, like, and you think back to imagine asking your parents about that when you're young.
Mm.
Like, you know, I never asked my mom that. I just in time learned it on my own why she doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, I never asked my dad that at all, even though I had to, but I didn't want to, because, you know, I just didn't want I didn't want to get the answer for it. For me, I just knew with my dad. I just knew. That's where it came from. But like my dad, like I said, he grew up in a very religious home. His brother was religious, extremely. His pastor, his mom was very religious. You know, his aunts, his uncles, they were all religious around his family. So, you know, but he was never that person. And I think it's because he questioned it too. But I never asked him about it, neither did my mom. Because I used to see my grandparents, when Sakura used to come, And they weren't like that. Pogo was the only one, the only grandparent who was very much, you know, insistent on us, you know, being, you know, religious, very close to religion and praying and all that. And so, you know, I think in time I understood that. But you're right. There's a question now when you know, because your kids will go, you know, some kids will be around. Like, I was around Rangers all the time, so I had a right to ask. I'm like, why aren't we this way? But I never connected with that way, so it never felt anything. But other kids might be different. They have questions, and you have to answer those questions. And what are you going to say? Why don't you? You know, are you going to tell them that? Are you going to, because what you say, you know, I think they said that there's like, for a period, you know, I think it's the first 13 years you're molding your kids. Look, everything in life that we do is all based on our experience. But as a kid, there's like maybe 10 to 13 years where you're responsible for, you know,
shaping
the foundations world. Exactly, shaping their worldview. And then in time, they kind of form their own, but you set the foundation for it.
Mm.
So, and morality is a big part of that. Like morality, that gets formed over time, but you know, those are foundations that are like, they're long lasting. To this day, I have morality things that my parents taught me that I carry to this day. So that I feel like those are things that, those are the ones that are set in stone. Others are kind of just placeholders until your maturity reaches a certain level. But, you know, but morality isn't. And so, and it is tied in religion. That's a tough question. You're right. I think, you know, I think the people who are parents now will probably have a better answer for that. But it's a tough question that I ask myself as well. Like, if I get to that position, what am I going to do? What am I going to say? You know, what will be my answer be? You can tell the truth, or do you want to let them decide on their own? You know, and if, you know, and then I think that's the best something. I think there's a balance in between there. But I also think that morality, like I said, you have to set the right foundations and belief system in your kids, and then let them then form their own relationship with whatever it is that they believe in.
And you know, the thing is that impulse to protect is, I think, the biggest problem, is because we try to, as much as we can. I'm not a parent, but my upbringing was they protected us for a very long time from things that they thought we couldn't handle and couldn't process. And they're probably right, because I think if we learned the things we knew later on in our youth, we would have been very different people. I don't know whether it would be for the better or for the worse, but excruciating different people. But that whole, how much should the coddling be, as I put it? Because at this point, I feel like I'm going to be a decent parent for my kid from 0 to about 6, and then I'm probably going to be crap at it from 6 until 12, 13. Probably going to be better at it when they start asking questions. Like, not, you know, questions not rooted in stuff like why.
Bro, that math, bro. Those maths, dude, when you're teaching math, that's going to be the hardest part.
Yeah, because that stuff's going to go way over my head. But it's concerning to that. You need to build someone's foundation when it comes to how they understand and interpret the world, what they're supposed to see. So maybe right now, the one thing I can probably say is, and probably to anyone who's religious, is what someone says is bullshit, regardless of where it's coming from. What truly tells you someone's intent and the direction they're going in are two things, I believe. And I've learned this in the course of my adult life. The first thing are their actions. What someone does is so important. If someone is going to work hard, it's apparent and obvious that the person is working hard. Now, it's not a case of that you can see the sweat of their brow or whatever, but the fruits of their labor are there. Whether you can understand them or not, they are there. And hard work is usually, in most cases, honest. Now, there's evil hard work, fair enough.
Uh-huh.
You know, some people work, the devil works hard, but some people work harder. That's true. But when people have good intentions, it's hard to ignore, to be honest. And you can see that this person works excruciatingly hard at what they do. They refine
100%.
Even if you can't understand
it. You can always see it.
Yeah, you can always see it. The second thing is that look at someone under pressure. Now, not under pressure, so good, you know, I need to take a shit and I'm far away and I'm caught in traffic. No, not that. I mean pressure as in you are faced with a supremely difficult decision. If someone chooses, I've learned this in relationships. What tells me more about someone is the decisions they choose to make based on the covenants they signed up for. if that person is willing to walk back everything they said for their own convenience and then just wrap you up in a ball and choose to forget, even though you had done X amount of things or whatever, that is that. That's who that person is. You've just seen who that person is. And there's a line from Firefly I always repeat, and I repeat it to the next one. And I said, live with a man 40 years. I love this tweet because it, this quote, because it's Shepard said it. It was the most beautiful encapsulation. It hit me later, properly when I was through the experience. Live with a man 40 years. Speak on every subject. Share a meal, share his home. And you'll never know the man. But hold the man over the volcano's edge. And on that day, you will have finally met the man. And I never got that saying up until that those events happened in my life, from all 2017 to today, to be honest. You will never truly know someone until there's something super difficult that probably involves you, that they should make a decision that you both know is right, but they won't, for self-preservation. No one will.
Oh, 100%. No one will. 100%.
And neither should
that you. That is the truth.
Neither should you. To be honest, neither should you. And again, it's about gauging who you're dealing with. Someone's actions tell you everything about them. And this even goes to religion. Like, what your pastor says and does is very important. If your pastor is adulterous and whatnot, they're human, they're not perfect. But then whatever they're preaching, take it with a sack of salt if you're going to keep subscribing to that. I'm not saying they're supposed to be perfect beings, all human, all flawed.
Take it all with a grain of salt and confirm it yourself. Form your own opinions about it. Form your own education. I mean, that applies to everything. You know, don't believe everything that everyone is telling you. You know, but, you know, I think more specifically in religion because of just how it was brought into the world, you know. And I think you hear stories about the colonizers that used to use religion and missionaries as a way to kind of, you know, enter into, you know, certain territories and stuff. And, you know, even now, as you know, as a kid, when you're looking back, and I'm looking back and I'm seeing some of the past, you know, like there'll be questions, like, you know, you'd be hearing this guy preaching about this and that, and do this and that. And then halfway through, he's like, collection plate, donation. You know, and you're like, you know, and even if the cause is righteous, like if it's good, if it's a real good cause, like we do a fundraising for this, we're fundraising for that, you know, yeah, you know, some people say that and then some people don't. Some people say that, but then that's not really what they're doing it for. They'll just say that and then they'll put the fund in something else. So, you know, I feel like, you know, just as much as we hold corporations and certain people accountable, you know, in a business setting or whatever, in a morality setting, and then you should just be able to hold that in yourself with religion and say, okay, bet, you're telling me about this and I want to believe it, but I got to make sure that you're being authentic with it. Because you must always have an authentic relationship with religion and with people, you know, and, you know, that, you know, the fire thing, that's why, I mean, for me, the saying that resonated with me that's like similar to the volcano one is, you never know really anybody until you have a drink with them, you know, until you have a few drinks with them. Especially, you know, especially in this first world, man, you never really know people until you have a drink with them because everybody's nice in this first world. You know, everybody's nice. Everybody knows how to be nice, how to look the part, smile, wave, put on the face. Everybody knows that. So let's have a few drinks and then I can get to know you because I know after a few drinks, you start singing. And once you start singing, then I can gauge whether or not we're the same person, we're the same frequency, or if you're somebody that just offers some bullshit, you know? And I think, you know, you can't do that with religion, obviously, but hey, bruh, if you can get a pastor drunk, my God.
you'd have done something phenomenal. Yeah, so it's and it's like the same boundaries you set with humans and other people, I think is if there's anything I can prescribe to, you know, this is the same boundaries you set with other people should be the same boundaries you set with any entity that tells you it knows what things are. And that's religion or science. You know, people who say things like question the vaccine.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. Like, dig in. These guys publish their stuff. Dig in and try to understand it at the depth of a level that you can. Make sure you understand what they're talking about. Understand also that this, I know the whole it coming in a year thing, stuff like that was incredible, but we have to understand some things that technology is advanced to a point that we're not aware where fields are in terms of their development. And yeah, people might say, why is there no HIV vaccine? Again, things might be just different in nature. And again, remember, money plays a part in it. HIV affects a part of the world. Corona affected the entire world. So there were a lot of pockets that were running dry that needed this to happen. So, hey, I don't know. See what you want, but just go out there, look at, research your stuff, understand what they talk. If you can't find a doctor to explain the different nomenclature and terms and whatever, to get what you're talking about, that same regard that you hold to whatever it is, hold it to everything else that prescribes to you that this is right. Because if you can find fault in it and flaw in it, you probably might, hey, who knows, you might as well, you probably will. But it doesn't come easy. And nothing is ever going to cushion you from what life is, which is what Zimbabweans live, unfortunately. Is, you know, like what you're saying, Gucci, praying for a better Zimbabwe. My mom said for the longest time, Shichanak. I think she's 3 seconds away from saying, fuck this shit. Because every time, you know, she's gone to that point where you can just see, she's like, you know, this shit ain't getting better. But then when you look at the scenario, the complex that religion and politics formed is that Zimbabweans, with the boomers specifically, fought this incredible struggle to get black people to parity with white people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people don't quite appreciate how big the cojones you have to have to go up against a white colonial power. Like, people don't really quite appreciate that. And, you know, people, I think it's been washed out of us because of these whole Heroes Day celebrations and the politicizing it of it and whatever. But it's always good to remember that this took cojones. Problem is, it stopped after. People got comfy. And people stopped questioning. People stopped asking questions. People stopped doing this. Zimbabwe was presented the Christian nation.
I think it's because, like we said, it got them through a tough time. And it was, you know, at that time when now humans, you believe in something that's greater than humans, right? To get you through all these things, and then humans take, and then you win. And, you know, this independence came, and then now the dark side of humanity starts taking over, the greed, the self-interest, and all that. And at that point, I think their relationship, it comes back to it. You know, people need something to believe in, you know?
Then you have to ask questions about everything you believe, though. I think that's the bottom line, is that I remember where I was reading this in a local publication, and someone was like, we have to remember that everyone who's elected into office is a public servant. They serve you. It's not the other way around. You need to begin to ask this question. Uh-huh. Okay, what is this? Like, you know, I'm not saying anything should, whatever, but they, again, build, all those relationships are built from not asking questions. I think that's how religion's impacted Africa for generations, is because people are too afraid to ask the hard questions. Because, yeah, the answer might not be what you want, but, yeah, you know what, at least find out. Fuck around and find out. Like, just ask the question, why is this happening? They'll probably give you an answer. Like, personally, working in journalism and the media, you can approach government organizations. They will literally give you answers you're looking for, if they can. Like, if they can, they'll be like, I know, listen, you know, can you wait for a response? They're not, you know, the stonewall people that most people think they are. They will, in most cases, give you a response, because they know that the longer it stays unanswered, the more it's going to bubble over. So they might as well tell you whether it exists or it doesn't. And in most cases, in some cases, they do take flak for what they've done. So it's you know, ask questions. Like it's part of your civic duty, both as a parishioner and a citizen of the world and as an individual. You know, just be curious, and all of it will come. And it, like what Tito was saying earlier, the relationship will build. You then build different relationships with the various things in your life, and again, the boundaries you set. Treat this like any relationship you would. I don't do this. I don't enjoy this, etc.
Now, question it all, man. Question it all. That's really, you know, that's all we've been saying. Like, last whatever. Anyway, to close it out, you watched Shang-Chi, did you?
Yeah.
What's that sigh for, man? I thought you said you enjoyed it.
Oh, I enjoyed it. It's just, in reflection, it's like, you know what I do when I watch, anything that's Western but Asian-based, I start now paralleling it with stuff done by Jackie Chan, people like Ozu, Akira Kurosawa, you know, that authenticity. I think we talked about it earlier. There's a market for inclusivity. And we got the Black Panthers, where they just splashed a bunch of African-looking things and a person there who represented the continent, and we all ran with it. Personally, I was not a fan. I thought that was the biggest form of cultural appropriation.
What's this? Wait, you All right, I just want you to say that for the audience.
Yeah.
Hey, man, we're going to get into Black Panther on another episode. That, you know, but I completely concur. Like, it was a movie that was the culture, the impact of it in terms of just what it was, the context of it, as like I was saying, where it was, what it represented to Black people in Hollywood, Black actors in Hollywood, the narrative of Black movies, predominantly Black, directed by Black, produced by Black, written by Black, designed by Black, all that stuff. That's what puts it where it is in pop culture. But the movie itself, right, I'll just leave it there.
Oh yeah, before we go, there's something I want to tell us. I just realized, I think you've already seen this. It looks like Runyararo Mafumo, UK-based director, directed portions of Netflix's Sex Education.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm seeing the
thing. Oh, really?
Yeah. Seeing the thing now on Greedy South. Runyararo Mafumo is the director on Netflix's Sex
Education. Like, excellence.
Hey, bro. This is what we're here for. So we're here for this. We live for this.
That is awesome. Dude, this is with a whole bunch of Black excellence this last week. There's a guy who Drake posted, a Zimbabwean artist that Drake posted on his profile. It was huge. It was all over on Twitter saying, my gosh, this is just unbelievable. Drake tagged him and everything. So, you know, it's a W for Zim people, Zimbabweans.
Big W. There's that artwork by Jay-Z as well. There's an artwork in his house. Let me just see if I can Google it really quick. Is it Rock Nation? Maybe I'm getting this incorrect. I remember some story about it that is involved in, Jay-Z appreciates Zim artists, even in the Herald, bruh. You see, she's in the Herald, it's proper.
Wow.
Jay-Z appreciates Zim artists. Logo visual artist Moffat, Moffat Takadiwa, who recently had one of his artists.
Moffat, that's just a Zim name. You already know where it's Zim. That's a Zimbo. Moffat, that's a Zimbo.
Yeah, Zimbos are doing it big. Like, I have a feeling that.
Was that?
I have a feeling that we're going to get to a point where we're going to get the same level of notoriety as other nations like Nigeria, South Africa, in different fields. And I feel Zimbabwe is going to be leaning more to the arts, for whatever reason.
We're talented, man. By the way, we've got to do a Rimba episode soon, man. We've got to get on that.
Get some
people on here, do a little bit of. Educate the people on the world of Rimbas.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. You message Manus and see if we can.
If he's free? Damn, that would be dope, huh? Yeah. If we can get Lickman, the god himself, on here, that would be epic.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. But I think it's a good place to sign off here. We talked a lot. You can see how the people respond to this one. We have a lot of religious friends.
We are about to get so, you know, cancelled. Yeah, about to get the
I don't think so. I think we're over exaggerating. I think people are I'm hoping, I have faith that our people are you know, are not that traditional in religion, that they'll be able to understand multiple point of views about something so sacred. Knocks on wood.
I certainly hope so.
Hi people, thank you. And for those of you who are looking for recommendations, Sanal musician, I saw him soon. That's the point. Sanal musician and Simi, Higher. That is a good song. Go listen to that. Mm-hmm. Or just listen to all of Sanal's stuff. He's the gospel. He's the guy.
He's a real one. For me, it'd probably be Dave's We're All Alone in This Together. I've been had that album on repeat for a while now. It's pretty interesting. And I keep saying to these people, watch The Green Knight. Like, 824 does not miss. 824 does not miss, ladies and gentlemen. So, yeah. One day I'll get to over to the artsy-fartsy side of film on these good days.
Yeah, one of these days. Keep trying, though. Keep trying. Yeah,
every day, man. Every day.
All right, man. Put us in the background.
You know what it is?